Welcome. This is In the Garden. This is a KUCI 88.9 FM radio broadcast in Irvine, California. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. This In the Garden show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, and I am David Letourneau, your DJ for the hour. And this week's topic is the hotline, and my guest is Linda Guinness. So, welcome, Linda.
Hi, David.
Hi there. How are you today?
Oh, pretty good.
Good.
We got some nice sunshine.
We've got some great weather now. Mm-hmm. We've had some rain, but it's looking really nice. Are you the lead for the hotline? That
I'm a co-lead, because we do like to have two people for leads for all of our projects. So, yes, they're
okay.
Karen Ward is my co-lead, and she is responsible for it. She has different duties, but we do work together.
Right. So this is a program through the Master Gardeners, and it's Master Gardeners, a big part of their effort is to educate the public, and this is an outreach program for the public to get their questions answered.
Yes, and Master Gardeners is part of a University of California Cooperative Extension, so that's the source of our information, and our mission is to extend research-based information to the general public, because the University of California, since it does have land-grant colleges, does have that agricultural aspect to it, and especially with California being such a big producer of food in our country, there's a lot of research going on into how to grow plants, so we try to take information and explain it in ways that's accessible to the homeowner who wants to grow plants, whether they're for food or just for ornamentals or for fun.
That's great. I'm going to digress just a little bit here and just talk about your background a little bit, just to give people an idea of where you've come from and what you do and why you do this. I know you're a retired educator.
Yes.
And Were you into gardening before, during that time at all, or how did you
get
some started?
Well, way back when I was a child, we lived in Chicago, and we did have a vegetable garden in the summer, of course, because
okay.
We had snow in the winter. And I remember that picking beans on a hot day. We picked 100 beans on a day. It was 100 degrees out. So I was always kind of into math. I thought that was kind of interesting. And then, you know, moved to California, and we had, you know, fruit trees, orange trees, and things like that. And then when I had my own home, I did resort to using the mow and blow guy for a while, and I was busy with other things and didn't do so much gardening. And
yeah.
Eventually,
I'm going to interrupt you real quick. The mow and blow mentality or guy, tell us a little bit about that, because I think a lot of people feel that they have a gardener and they're all set. But the reality is it's just...
He mowed the lawn and blew the grass clippings off the sidewalk.
Right.
And pretty much, he was very nice. Once in a while, he would trim a hedge, you know, without
right.
me even asking. So it was an extra good gardener. But I reached a point where I became more interested in gardening. And, of course, we were going through water restrictions. I had to remove a big tree, so that kind of got me started.
Okay.
Once the tree was ripped up and the lawn was all gone because they had to dig out the tree roots, I thought, oh, I could start over with drought-tolerant shrubs. So I got into that and started going to classes at different nurseries. Most of the nurseries around here offer classes on Saturday mornings, and found out about square foot gardening. So I started vegetable gardening.
That's Mel...
Mel Bartholomew.
Bartholomew. There's actually a book on that. So
yes, it's an excellent book.
Yeah, you know, people want to pursue that.
Yes.
You know, and it's easy, I think, from the standpoint.
Yeah, because it was just barely mentioned in the topic I went to. So I went home online and, you know, looked up more and bought the book.
Yeah.
So that kind of got me started. And then I got into succulents and all different things. And I did have a school garden. I got a grant from Toshiba. If anybody here is a teacher, Toshiba offers science grants for schools, for people to teach
sure.
science. And so we used the school garden to teach kids about plants and science, and we did math in there because we had square foot garden, and that was nice for the last few years of my teaching before I retired. We had a school garden, and then as soon as I retired, then I applied for Master Gardeners and unfortunately was accepted into the program, and
yeah.
I've been working with it ever since.
How long have you been a Master Gardener?
I was in the class of 2012, so.
Wow, okay. So that's 6 years, well, almost 7 years.
We won't say what year the program
okay.
is.
Okay. So you said
I did retire younger than 65.
Well, you don't look that age anyway, if you are. But, you know, one of the things that I've experienced with you, Linda, is that you really are well-rounded. You've done a lot of self-education as well, beyond even the Master Gardener program, but also you share that knowledge, which is great. And this is why the hotline is so incredible, because you help to develop and lead this. I mean, I know it's an evolving thing every year, but it seems like we have a lot of people that work with you on this. You're not the only one.
Oh, no, not by any means. We have a whole team of people. We have, the way it's set up is we have people who are responsible for posting the questions. So if you send in something to our email address or fill out the form on our website, it goes into our mailbox, and there's people who post those questions
right
the next day. So if you send something in on a Tuesday, it will be posted Tuesday night for the whoever's on the Wednesday team. We'll answer that question. Usually, sometimes the same day or sometimes within
right
the next day, depending on if it requires a lot of research.
Maybe we should talk about the process here, because this is an outreach program for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone that's listening, if you have an issue or a concern about a situation with a plant that's not looking too healthy, or you see something that's unusual, you see even pests that are swarming around your plant or tree or whatever it might be, this is a resource that is available to everybody. So maybe we should start by mentioning the ways to contact, because there's a phone number, there's email, and there's even a website. And I'll let Linda
Okay. If you go to our website, mgorange.ucanr.edu, that's mgorange.ucanr.edu.
If you forget this, you can always Google.
Just MG Orange, and you'll
find
us.
Or Master Gardeners of Orange County. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just so we have people driving, and sometimes they don't catch it all. But
yeah,
Google's a great resource, and we'll talk about that in a minute
as
well.
Yeah, I just put MG Orange and don't bother with all the rest of the letters, and it pops right up. Anyway, on that website, there's a Contact Us part. If you, on the top navigation bar, it says Contact Us. Then you will see our phone number there and our email address. And I'll give it out now, but I know if you don't write and drive, so. If you're home, you could write it down. It's 949-809-9760. That's 949-809-9760. And then our email address is really long. I don't know. Do you want me to go through this?
Yeah, why don't we just mention and maybe repeat it once. But,
yes.
But,
it's UCCE. That's University of California Cooperative Extension. MG for Master Gardeners. OC, that's Orange County. Then hotline at ucanr.edu. And ANR is Agriculture and Natural Resources. So that's sometimes if you know what the letters are.
Right.
It's not A and R. It's A. Letter N,
N
R.
Correct.
So now I'll say it a little quicker. UCCEMGOC hotline at ucanr.edu. Now there's a form. If you go to our website, you can click on a thing, you know, gardening questions, ask us, and there'll be a form to fill out. You don't have to remember the email address. You just fill out the form and click on the end, submit, and that will go to our box.
Over.
The only disadvantage to that is you can't attach pictures there. If you want to attach a picture, you would have to send it to our email address using whatever
right
kind of email service you might
but
have.
But you could copy the...
you can copy the hotline address from
the address,
there.
URL
yes
code, yeah, and then...
That's all printed out
right
on the screen there for you to
now
see.
Maybe one thing to remember, too, if you're using the phone number, that you won't get a live person. It is a recording. But,
that's true.
But your folks call back.
Yes. There's a person, whoever's on duty for that day, will transcribe what you say. So please speak clearly. We sometimes we want to be sure we get that phone number correct. And or if you want to leave an email address for us to email
yeah
you. But if you leave your phone number, the person will call you back after your question is posted and we'll have a conversation with
you. And I always suggest that people, when they're leaving a message, leave the phone number twice.
Good idea.
Because it's a little bit, you know, if there's a you're on a cell phone and it drops for that one or two numbers, at least you've got a second shot at that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the folks are really good about responding, so keep that in mind.
Yes, our response rate has really gone down. We keep statistics on everything about the kind of calls we get, how many calls, what day of the week is busiest, what months are busiest, and our response rate has gone down a lot since, you know, the past 5 years or so. It's from like maybe 2 days to getting your question answered the same day.
Wow.
So. Wow. Or which would be like the day after you call in, posting day, same day it's posted.
A vigilant crowd.
Yes, so we have a team, and we help each other out, and we have other, you know, we have training, we keep up to date on things, we do what we call kibitzing. If someone doesn't know something, they'll put it out there to ask for help. So it's really a team effort.
Yeah, I've seen some of the discussions going back and forth just before the final answer is sent out, and it's vetted really well. And the great thing is this is all supported with scientific research through the University of California and other institutions as well, but the UC system is pretty thorough.
So. Yeah, we do, in most of our responses, we'll provide links to something we will tell you to summarize what you might do to get rid of a pest, and then also provide the link so you could read more about it and see the research and the scientific thing. Mostly University of California. Some of the questions we get, though, aren't covered by California, and so we might get something from Texas A&M. They have a good tomato website there, or Florida,
right.
Different places. But we try to keep to EDU websites because they're educational institutions, and we know the information has been vetted and edited and passed by scientists.
Right. So if going back to how someone might start this process, you've got the three different options as far as contacting you.
Yes.
And so what's the next step? I mean, they want to tell you what their issue is.
And the question that they send in, it's, you know, the more information, the better.
Right.
It's pertinent. Like if you have a picture, sometimes a picture of a tree from like 50 feet away when the tree has lost all its leaves, we won't know what the tree is. Just like I've seen on tomato forums, someone will take a picture of a tomato. What variety is this? Well, there's thousands of varieties of tomatoes. You just can't tell. But, you know, close up, if you want identification of a plant, you know, far away, close up, as many different parts as you can. Like the flowers are really important in identifying plants. Leaves, how the leaves are attached to the stems. So the more photos, the better. We prefer in focus, blurry sometimes.
It will probably blur photos,
especially if we're trying to enlarge them to see details. You know, phones these days take wonderful pictures.
They do.
And it's really helpful to... someone was having a citrus problem. They showed a close-up shot of the problem, but also an overview of where the tree was, and we could see that they had their hose right next to the trunk. Well, that's a big no-no.
You know,
you don't water the trunk. You water the roots, which are far out from the trunk.
Right. It's almost the canopy line
where that starts. Yeah,
and
it's called the drip line because that's where the water would drip off the outermost branch of the trees, and that's how far the roots go off.
And those are the newer roots that are soaking up that water.
A picture of the environment your plant's growing in is really helpful. Sometimes we might notice that the soil is really dry or really muddy, or you could see slime trails from snails on the ground, or you might see droppings from some insect or something. So an overview picture is always good. If you don't have pictures, just a description of, you know, what the problem is. Has it just started, or is it something that's been ongoing for a long time? When did you notice it? And just try to describe as much as possible, because what we do, whether we're going to call you or email you back, we do some research first. That's why even on a phone call, just say, call me about my plants. Try to front load us a little bit with more information, like the name of the plant and what the problem is, so we can go ahead and do some research first.
Right.
Because otherwise we'll be playing phone tag. You'll have to tell us more information, then we'll have to go research it and call you back. So the more we know ahead of time to get research, the better off. The better answer we can provide you with.
Right. So some of the things that people should be providing are maybe frequency of watering, the location relative to the sun.
Well, yeah, even something like, you know, my plants that used to be doing great here all of a sudden are getting all brown and everything. Well, maybe if we knew that your neighbor just cut down their big tree, which was shading your yard, that made a big change in the environment, that could be it. Or sometimes the pictures really help, or we could see where shadows are and things, you know, like maybe this tree isn't getting enough light, or there's only 8 inches between the block wall and the pool, and there's no room for the roots to grow, and it's going to ruin your pool someday. So those, you know, photos really help a lot.
Yeah, and I always tell people, you know, if you've got a disease issue with a leaf, Don't just take the front side. Do the back side,
yeah,
too.
Look in the, because sometimes the leaf doesn't really look that bad on top, and you can't figure it out, and you turn it under, and you go, oh, my goodness, look at all that.
What's going on?
You see the insects and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's
underneath.
A convention going on that you didn't even know about.
Yeah, we always say, look under the leaves.
Yeah, and even the location, the city, as far that's relevant, because the climate in Newport Beach is going to be different than the climate in, let's say,
Yorba Linda. Even.
Yorba Linda, yeah.
Or a certain, we know that there's a big pest problem several years ago, but grotto bugs were just eating up the Huntington Beach Community Garden. We knew in that area of Huntington Beach, but grotto bugs were really a serious problem. So if someone let us know that they were in that vicinity, we would know that that was a problem for that area, where maybe in other parts of Orange County, people never saw them.
Right. So you can't overload you guys with information.
No, the more is better. Usually you don't have to tell us your whole life story, but tell us the plant's life story.
I got my plant at when I was 3 years old. No. Yeah, that's understandable. So what are the what would be the – so you then would respond to people.
Yes. We usually give them some resources. We try to give – there's two different kinds of things we could find. We'll talk a little bit more about the IPM website.
Right.
There's a big, giant, long, lengthy article about the bug, but there's also something called a pest note or quick tips, and those are made for the homeowner. And so that'll condense that, and we'll put all the scientific things like about degree days and a lot of things that maybe applications of pesticides that have to put on by a licensed applicator. It'll narrow it down for the homeowner and give the highlights of what you need to know to solve your problem in your garden.
Right. And like as Linda was saying, the response time is pretty quick. I'm amazed at the intricacy of how you folks work together to get this stuff accomplished.
Oh, we have assigned days, days of the week, and whether they're odd, like I have the odd-numbered Mondays and I have the odd-numbered questions because Mondays and Tuesdays we get a lot of questions.
So after the weekend,
we have
probably
a couple. Yeah, because we have the everything that comes in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the Monday team will handle.
Yeah.
So we have two people and we share. One person takes the odd-numbered questions, one person takes the even. And then we also, some news, we get the same questions many times and so we can use the same responses.
Sure. But the thing to remember as well is it's not – you won't get a response on Saturday or Sunday.
No.
So, they do work 5 days a week, and they don't get paid for this. So.
No, we do it because we're one of those strange people who think it's fun to look things up on the computer, and we like to tell people what to do.
She hasn't told me what to do yet, but I'm waiting. No, I'm kidding. But, it's a great service. And I think it's a labor of love for a lot of you because you're very passionate about it. And
that's true. And there's always new things coming up. They say every month there's a new invasive pest in California. So it's not like the same stale old stuff all the time.
Right.
There's new things that come out. Like, a couple years ago we really became aware of the shot hole borer, which is still a big problem in Orange County. And we're starting to see a little bit more of that. The homeowners are starting to realize that. And now it's HLB, the citrus disease, which is unfortunately spreading throughout Orange County and becoming a real concern. And we want to get the word out to people. So if we have a lot of questions on citrus, so even if your question is something totally different about citrus, we'll still give you information about HLB and ACP because we think it's so important for people in Orange County to know about that.
Yeah, it is. It's had some devastating effects.
In Florida, that's why you see ads on TV that one brand of said we're the only juice that's still made all in Florida because a lot of the other juices are starting having to import oranges from Brazil.
Go to a different resource. Yeah. And that's why it's critical not to be moving fruits that are in certain areas.
Like all Orange County, pretty much. If you want to give a friend fruit from your citrus tree, no leaves or stems attached to it and wash it off first.
Right.
Because you might give them something with leaves attached. And those tiny bugs are very, very tiny. Or their eggs could be on that leaf. And we could see on a map of where the disease is in Orange County. And
the outbreaks have been.
There's gaps in between. And so those bugs don't fly that far. It's because people have moved things from one area to another.
Right.
And so there's little jumps in where the disease is present. So we have that on our website, once again, MG Orange. Look up that, and we have our pest information, and we have Orange County invasive pests. So we have the shot hole borer information there, citrusillid. There's a new palm weevil coming up. And we have some information on mosquitoes, because even though they don't do anything to our plants, as gardeners, we should be aware of not having standing water, doing anything that's going to promote
the growth. Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is, even the wood that's taken from
firewood. Don't move firewood.
Don't move firewood. It's a no-no. One of the things, I'm going to ask Linda a couple of questions on this, is I'm going to mention it, though. The Master Gardener public website is a great resource, and it links to other websites as well. But I was going to ask you about what your sources are and how you do that research. I mean, I'm sure you have some that have really stumped you and others that, like you said, you've gotten so many questions that relate to that same topic that you almost have a standard answer. But
one of our resources that is used most often is the IPM website. And the way I find it, I don't always type in these whole long websites, and I know most of you probably don't either. I put IPM ANR, and I'm not even sure whether the ANR comes first or second. But I know if I type in those three groups of three letters, IPM and then a space ANR or ANR space IPM, I'll come up to the IPM website. It's ipm.ucanr.edu.
And real quick, just as a point of reference, IPM means Integrated Pest Management. So it deals with the techniques to eradicate these pests. And
you might have heard that more because more cities are adopting that as part of their city policies. Integrated pest management means the policy of always starting with the remedy which will do the least harm to the environment.
Right.
So we start first with mechanical. That would mean squishing the bug, or go over the grass with my pruners, or
spray with a hose, hose, or
and then there's cultural controls, or keeping your garden clean and removing the old leaves, and if you don't want rats around, get all the fruit off the ground, and putting a barrier up around the tree. All the different things you can do, different steps you can take to manage the pest before you resort to anything that would be chemical. So, and even then, follow directions, because part of the reason we have problems with pesticides, or everyone's upset about glyphosate, is because it was used so liberally and sprayed all over the sidewalks and places where it would go into the water system. A lot of people don't realize that only the water in your house goes to the sewage treatment plant. All the water from outside goes down the drain and right in the ocean. That's not treated. So fertilizer that, you put fertilizer on and then it rains the next day and it all goes down the drain, all that's going into the ocean. So integrated pest management really is showing a concern for the environment. And also, we call it pest management. We don't call it eradication, because you wouldn't get, if you get rid of all of the pests, sometimes you also get rid of the beneficial insects as well as the ones that we don't like. And, we may have to come to grips with the fact that not all bugs are good. We do live in a world where there's pests and disease and things that we don't like. So we try to minimize those and let the beneficial bugs flourish more. And then if we have a healthy yard, things will be more balanced. Sometimes we cause problems by overusing pesticides.
Well, and I think another, just a side note on that, is people tend to look at the directions on these treatments and they figure, okay, well, if they're saying to put one cup of something in this mixture, I'm going to put two cups in to really...
Yeah, but not a good idea.
It's not a good idea, and this stuff has been researched, and they found kind of the perfect formula. And again, as Linda was saying, this is sort of the last resort, if you will, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah, I'll get back to the website now. So you found the website.
Sorry about that.
And there's... If you're on the home page of the website, you'll see there's four squares up there, and one of the squares says, pests of home and gardens. So there's a pink tree there until they change the website. But anyway, you can click on that, and then it will give you, there's lots of information there, and the part kind of in the middle give you four different categories to pick on what your plant. Is it an ornamental plant? Is it a fruit tree? Is it vegetable? And then there's another one. So you click on whichever one applies to your tree. And then from there, it'll give you, you narrow it down some more. Like if you pick fruit trees, it'll, peach, plum, citrus. So you click on citrus, And then from there, it'll tell you this big giant list of all the different possibilities there could be for what's wrong with it, whether it'll be insect pests, vertebrate pests like rats and things, and diseases, because diseases are lumped in with pests too.
Sure.
So it's not just creatures. It's like bacteria
right.
and fungus and things.
And there are pictures with all this as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, you click so on you each can. One, there's pictures. Now, if you think, if that's kind of daunting, because citrus, there's quite a huge list there.
Right.
And to click through each one would be time-consuming. On the same website, you'll see where there's a pest identification, and that'll take you through step-by-step, where you would click on the same beginning thing, whether it's a fruit tree or a vegetable or an ornamental. And you could click on fruit tree, and then you could click on citrus, and then it'll ask you what part of the plant there's a problem with, whether it's the leaf, the fruit, the twigs, the stems, or the whole tree. And then from then, it will give you pictures of what does the damage look like, and you click on that, and then it will give you the possibilities. So that's a really nice part of the website that narrows things down a lot, because then it'll only give you like two or three different things it could possibly be, and you could see which one looks the most like yours. The other thing you could do is if you already know the name of the pest, like I have white flies, what can I do about that? You could type in your Google search white flies and then put IPM after that, and it'll come up with the integrated pest management solution. And you could look and see if it's from UC or maybe from another university. But usually that'll take you to our information directly.
Right, right. And that again, this is information that is scientifically researched, so you know there's the viability of it more than likely working based on their research that's been done.
Yeah, and again, it's not like pushing chemicals. It'll say the first thing is hose off your tree, or thin it out if it's, the branches are too dense, something like that. So we always start with the simplest things you can do first. Even for snails and slugs, it'll tell
right.
you things about, laying out the wet newspaper or a piece of wood and then going out the next morning and collecting them and putting them in the trash or squishing them. And So it's not a promoting heavy-duty things where they're not really necessary.
I think they do tend to identify when it might be appropriate to do that next step, if you will. So it seems to be a process that...
Yeah, it'll go step by step, starting the first thing you'll see, the simplest thing, and then if that doesn't work, you try the next, or if the problem is too big. And also on some things, like if you find the citrus leaf miner page, it'll say, the damage is mainly cosmetic, and you could just ignore it, because it's really not going to affect the tree.
Right, right. So what other sources would you, or have you... I mean, we all hear about Google, but I think if you go to Google and you can get to the UC A&R website, you'll probably get a lot better source of information regarding this. But
there's some other ones that we like. Tomato Problem Solver, that's a good one for tomatoes, because we like things that have a lot of pictures too. That really helps a lot if you can see it. And helps you narrow down the problem a lot. And that's from Texas A&M, which is another university.
Yeah.
So, and their climate they have pretty much the same bugs. Now, sometimes if we get things from Florida, they have some different diseases that aren't present here in California.
Right.
Or sometimes we have difference in pests. But any university stuff, they research it, even if they might be mentioning some disease that we don't have here. So there's still a whole lot of overlap.
Right. But so you have to keep take it with a grain of salt from the standpoint of where is this coming from and what area, like Florida's got humidity and more of a subtropical climate than what we have here.
They have plants there that are classified as invasive that aren't invasive here in California because we just don't have the moisture that would encourage their growth that much. Clemson has a lot of good stuff. It depends on what the problem is. In USDA, sometimes just a plant finder. For trees, like if you're looking to plant a tree, the Cal Poly has one. Cal Poly is, right here in California, so they're not going to tell you to plant the East Coast trees. It's the California trees, and it's a really nice website where you select, how big you want the tree, whether you want an evergreen tree or deciduous tree, what kind of leaves, do you want fruit or no fruit or flowers or no flowers and strong branches or something, and you could put that in, and it'll tell you what trees might be appropriate and also what problems they might have, like We looked one up this morning, and it said that it had weak branches and its roots can be invasive. So we thought, oh, I don't think we want that tree.
So this is a good resource if you're planning a garden as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna interrupt you for a second here. We've got to do a station identification. You're listening to KUCI at 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. This is In the Garden, a show produced by the Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm your host, David Letourneau, for the hour, and I have with me Linda Guinness, who is a Master Gardener and hotline extraordinaire.
And also, one more thing, David, I want to add while you're plugging the station. If you want to listen to some of these podcasts, you're not quite sure where to get them, on our website, MG Orange, you'll see on the left-hand side there's a little icon with a radio tower, and if you click on that, it'll give you a list of all the past shows that you could listen to.
And it's easy to navigate through there. And thank you for mentioning that. I tend to leave that out sometimes, so it's good to know. Because there's plenty of shows in there, not just this show about the hotline, but there's other topics as well.
Oh, you could look up things in growing strawberries or tomatoes or starting seeds. The reason we made sure that was more prominent on the website is because of the hotline. Sometimes people would write in questions. I want to find this old episode of the podcast. I'm having trouble finding the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Can you help me find the podcast? And that we better make it easier to find.
So now, do you make recommendations about colicky babies and things like
that? No.
Okay.
We don't go that far.
So let's talk about what you guys are experiencing right now. We're in the end of January almost. And I know that with each season, you probably get a lot more questions that are related to each other. Is there anything that's really prevalent right now?
I just look through our questions we've gotten since our winter break, and I would say at least more than half of them are citrus, which, you know, we get through all through the year. Citrus and avocados are two of our most popular topics. We had a couple of avocado questions, even though it's winter time, and lots of citrus, all different kinds of citrus. About, for example, we had one person they're selling their home, and they're leaving behind this lemon tree they really wanted, really liked, and wondered if, you know, they cut off a sucker. They said, because they thought it might grow better than taking seeds. Well, no, it's actually kind of the reverse, because if it's a sucker, something growing from the bottom, it means it's growing from the rootstock.
From the rootstock.
If you see a citrus tree, or almost all fruit trees are grown on rootstock, which means the bottom part of the roots that are inside the ground are a different variety than what you have on the top that's producing fruit.
Which is what they call a scion.
Yes, and the rootstock is chosen because of its disease resistant and being very hardy, and the top part of the tree, which is grafted onto that, is chosen for its flavor and fruit production. So if you do have it, you're moving away and you're leaving your favorite tree, you're better off planting those seeds, because even though they won't be on that hardy rootstock, you're still more likely to get good fruit than if you take a sucker, which is growing up from the rootstock. You'll just get something that's, especially in citrus, full of thorns and won't give you anything that's worth eating.
Right. And this is a good time of the year to be moving a tree if you want. I mean, obviously it's dependent upon size, maybe, just logistically, but because it's a little cooler weather. Citrus doesn't apply so much.
But other trees that are dormant, like once they have that's why this is now the best time to plant deciduous fruit trees. Some of them are bare root and some of them might be in a little bit of soil, but they're dormant now. So when they're dormant, it's easier to move or plant. And also, a little tree, you have less chance of breaking major damage.
I was going to just ask you, do you find the majority of your questions are problem issues, or is it curiosity about, let's say I want to get fruit trees?
I would say it's more problem-oriented, that, you know, I have this tree, and what's the matter with it? Why isn't it growing? Or it used to be okay, and now it's not. And
But you're not adverse to receiving questions about...
Oh, no, we got one from a woman who had... I might have mentioned it in the last show, but someone had seen a flower when she was hiking and wanted to know the name of it, and couldn't find it in the native plant books, and it turned out because it wasn't a native plant, it was something else.
Okay.
So we were, and saw, or someone who was vacationing and saw a shrub she really liked and took a picture of it, and fortunately it was something I had seen in a nursery. So of course, I didn't just tell her it was the name of that plant. I Googled it and looked it up, and checked in, some from some nursery growers, where I would say the nursery have their plants labeled correctly. and verified that was a Jatropha, which is more common in Florida, but you can buy it here too. And so was able to identify the plant. So sometimes it's plant ID. Sometimes it's, I'm starting a vegetable garden. What should I do?
Sure.
So it's
sure.
Starting from scratch, which is really fun because there's so much to teach someone who's just starting from scratch. So
right.
It's a lot of it is problems that we get pictures of all kinds of strange things.
So you mentioned citrus.
Mm-hmm.
You said you get a lot of that.
Yes.
Right at the moment.
Oh.
Is anything specific to that?
Well, citrus leaf miners, because they're so common,
right.
We get a lot of that, and that's, when you see those wiggly lines in the leaf, or sometimes the leaf will be curled or distorted in kind of a little cocoon underneath there, that's from the citrus leaf miner, which usually, unless it's a huge percentage of the leaves of the tree, is usually just a nuisance pest, and you don't really have to do anything about it.
Right.
If you keep cutting off the leaves, that's almost worse, because then if you keep stimulating new growth, they like the new leaves. They don't bother the old leaves, so you keep giving them more to eat. Also, if you have some people buy the traps for them, they have a pheromone to attract them.
Right.
Don't hang it in the tree, because you're just attracting them into your tree. You hang it a distance away
from the
tree. So
you're increasing the population,
yes,
indirectly.
Hey, come over here. I have a citrus tree.
So
you hang in an orchard. Now, on some of the instructions, they will tell you to hang in the tree, because for commercial citrus production, they're just using them to monitor the quantity of bugs, the levels, to see if they need to do treatment. We're not using it to monitor the levels. We want to we use them in our garden. And you only need one, because it's like one covers a whole acre. Put it far away from your tree and far away from citrus, because you want to attract them away from your citrus. You're not really using it to count bugs. So that's something, a common one. And now I think people are becoming more aware of ACP and HLB, which is, ACP is Asian citrus psyllid, which is a very tiny little bug that's been present in Orange County for quite a while, but wasn't as much of a problem until the disease became present. HLB is Huanglongbing. It's a citrus disease that was from Asia, because someone brought in a scion, a cutting that they gave out to people in their garden club up in
was it Cypress or Cerritos?
No, it was in L.A. County, but kind of on the border of Orange County. It was in 2012 the disease was first detected. So it's like mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are more of a nuisance unless they have West Nile virus in them, then they're really serious. The Asian citrus psyllid is more of just of a nuisance unless it has the HLB disease that it's transmitting. And then that's fatal to your tree. There is no cure for that yet.
Right.
I saw something on the internet about somebody who claimed he would sell you this fertilizer that would cure HLB, but that's not really true.
Yeah.
So I think he just wanted to sell that fertilizer. But anyway, that's something serious, and that we would recommend people. We have a lot of resources we'll send you to. There is an ACP website. It's from the California Department of Agriculture. So if you Google CDA, ACP, you'll find it. And it's on our website. We have links to on our MG Orange website.
Right.
And it'll tell you what it looks like, what the pest looks like. They're really small, though, and what the damage might look like, so you can see if there's any signs of that. And then who to report it to if you have the tree, because that needs to be reported. We want to control that. There have already been lots of trees. I don't know if it was close to 1,000 trees removed in Orange County, because we have so much backyard citrus here.
Right, right. And I think people, they overlook it until it gets to a point where it's an extreme condition as well.
Yeah. The one thing that is recommended for a homeowner can do to minimize the risk, or at least reduce the risk, is to do a soil drench with imidacloprid. It's a Bayer Advanced Citrus. And the reason we could mention the brand name is because there aren't any other competing brands out there that would do that. And that's a once-a-year thing, and it wouldn't kill the disease if the disease is already there, but it will kill the psyllids that are spreading the disease.
Which would be transferring it,
yeah,
right.
So that could reduce the chances of catching it. So that's all that information is on the website as well.
And I think we mentioned the website. One of the great things about it, if you have curiosity about gardening, is it does make people folks aware of what is happening out there.
Yeah, we have a calendar, because we do have events. We speak in a lot of different places in Orange County. We have booths at some events too, so anything open to the public will be on there on our website. And if you click on the link there, it'll give you information, the map to the location, the hours, whether there's a fee involved or whether it's free, and anything else you might need to know.
And it's interesting because a lot of cities are really taking steps to make the general public aware of, for example, the shot borer beetle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big movement with the cities to try and minimize that as well.
Because mm-hmm. it's affecting so many parks.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I know the San Diego, the Tijuana River.
Yeah, they were in the willows there.
Yeah.
Willow is one of their most favorite trees. There's like over 40 different trees that this will affect, so it's a pretty broad problem.
Right.
One of their favorites was the box elder, which is kind of a popular ornamental tree. Sycamore, really high on the list, too, and
right.
then the willows.
So not only is it important to be aware of this, and there's signs that you can tell about the tree, and we're talking in generalities a little bit, but at the same time, these may be trees, as you decide to plant new trees, that you maybe want to stay away from for the time being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I know they're working vigorously on this.
They're developing the list. They said they're updating the list of trees to which ones are highly susceptible and which ones are only moderately susceptible.
Right.
So people do want to, they don't want to discourage people from planting trees. But,
right.
But, you know, to maybe make some choices there that'll give you less.
And this is why it's critical not to be transporting wood from, let's say, Orange County into Ventura County, because
mm-hmm.
you potentially transport that that disease or bug or whatever it might be that is not good for any trees. But go ahead. I'm sorry, Lynn.
I was going to say, or if you're taking your tree down, this tree is full of shot hole borers. I need to take it down, but I'm going to take this wood up to my cabin in Big Bear.
Right.
No, don't do that.
Right.
It has to be, you have an infected tree, the wood has to be solarized by wrapping it in plastic or chipped into pieces that are smaller than 1 inch.
1 inch.
So really basically turn into sawdust almost.
But this is these are the types of things we don't want to hear about them, but at the same time we want to be aware of them because,
yes. mm-hmm.
You know, the people that brought this citrus scion in didn't realize, and that's just one. I mean, in my mind, I'm imagining just a little stick.
Yeah, they put in their suitcase and didn't
right.
declare when they went through customs because they, oh, it's just a little stick.
It's just, what's the big deal?
California's just too picky about that.
Right, and it's on the verge of devastating. It's done it in Florida, their citrus industry, and it can affect us as well, and it is affecting us.
Yeah, especially with backyard trees. I look at that map and think of all those people who lost their citrus trees in their backyard to this disease, and so far it's, people, there are scientists working to control it. There are people who have traveled to Vietnam where they've had the disease to study the trees that didn't get the disease to
right.
see what is there about the resistant trees that they might be able to use to combat the problem here.
Yeah, it's, so that's critical, you know, and I think the cities are stepping forward to make people aware of it, as I mentioned earlier, and we're certainly, you'll see information about it in our website with maybe articles that are pointed out.
And they do have information available in Spanish now. I'm not sure if they have it in Vietnamese yet, but I know there was a really push to get this printed in other languages other than English.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what else is there that we should be aware of during this, or that you're seeing that people may have questions, and the reason I ask that is because someone may be thinking about planting petunias right
mm-hmm.
now. Is this the time, or is there certain things that you would suggest people look at and consider based on the time of the year or things that they should be doing getting ready for the next season here of spring?
Well, right now, it's still a good time to put in your bare root fruit trees. Our chill hours have been just terrible the last 2 years,
right.
so... Maybe better off, don't plant a pear tree. Asian pears are something that might do well, but other kind of pears, they just don't grow here. There's a lot of information about chill hours. If you're buying a tree from some nurseries, we'll have that on the little card tag attached to the trees that will say how many chill hours that requires to bear fruit.
Yeah.
And that helps the tree. It goes into a dormant phase, and then it comes out of the dormant phase. And if we don't get the chill hours, it never becomes dormant. You know, last year I had to strip leaves off one of my fruit trees because it just never got cold enough for the leaves to fall off.
So that's one thing you can do is strip the leaves. But at the same time, when you're shopping for these trees...
Yeah, find one that doesn't require many chill hours. Right. For Orange County, especially if you live around the coast, 100 maybe is what... We're lucky we get 100 or maybe a little above that. If you're in a canyon or valley, I know I looked at the chill hours. You could find there's a website, too, that has the chill hours. They're updated every day by county and by stations. Right. We have three stations in Orange County now, and Cota de Casa has, like, way more chill hours than we have here in Irvine.
Right.
And even San Clemente has more, so they can grow different things.
So look at that. You know, and the caution I would suggest as well is to check these, because sometimes the big box stores are buying volume.
Yeah, they'll buy carloads
of...
Also, like Home Depot, they might order for all of Southern California, which it could include... Like we were saying, Big Bear and Elevations in San Bernardino, where they probably have hundreds and hundreds of chill hours and carry the same stores in Costa Mesa.
So I think they're sort of aware of these things, the big box stores, but at the same time, I wonder if they just figure, oh, it's a great price and we can make a good profit on it and not consider that this might not be appropriate for this particular area.
A lot of the stores will have maybe one person who's a nurseryman there that really does know their stuff, but a lot of them are, you know, just clerks and wouldn't know.
So you wonder about the purchasing agents, though. That's what I can, you know.
Well, they're just doing it on a broad area, not on a store-by-store basis. I mean, there's some stores that maybe were, I think they're more careful than they used to be.
Yeah.
But that thought just left my mind about fruit trees. But anyway, there's a lot of different ones out there, but beware the chill hours. Oh, right here at the research station, they are doing experiments using some of the fruit trees, apples especially, that require more chill, like Red Delicious, and growing them out here in Irvine to see how they do with fewer chill hours. Because the chill hours are kind of a range, and it gives you an idea, but they're not that exactly precise. Like if you buy a tree that requires 200 chill hours on the label and you only have 180, that might not make much of a difference. 20 hours is not that precise.
And there are things that you can do to help a little bit. You mentioned stripping the leaves.
Oh, my. I have a friend who knows someone who was determined to grow pears. So when it got like almost cold enough, his chill hours are below 45 degrees. So if it was in like the upper 40s but not quite 45, he would go to the 99-cent store and buy bags of ice and put them under his tree to reduce the temperature a few degrees.
Did that work?
I don't know.
We're not advocating that.
That's a little silly. Like, you know, if you buy a... Citrus doesn't require any chill hours, so you're safe with that. Or pomegranates, you're safe with figs.
Right.
There's a lot of things you can grow. Guavas, tropical dragon fruit, a lot of wonderful things you can grow that don't require any chill.
Right. You mentioned apples. Stripping the leaves off helps a little bit.
Yeah, I have an Anna that seems it will bear fruit at random times of year. And Anna will produce fruit even, I have a friend in Corona Del Mar. Was a nice big Anna apple tree that produces a decent amount of fruit. And, that will help have it go through that dormancy cycle, which is better for the tree.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, it just came to my mind, this is an ideal time for pruning. Are you having people ask about pruning on the hotline?
We do get questions.
Because we have roses out there that are,
roses,
this is the prime time for doing that. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Roses and fruit trees, both. This is the time of year because it's the dormancy thing, you know, with the cold weather and Rose actually, there's not a whole lot of difference between pruning a rose tree and pruning a fruit tree. The difference is on the fruit tree, you have to know how far back to prune from the end so you're not cutting off the part that's going to bear fruit next year. Because some trees will require cut back a third and some require cutting back more. Apples have spurs that will produce fruit multiple times. You don't want to remove all the spurs. But it's basically the same thing. You don't want branches to crisscross each other where they would rub each other. You cut off things that are, you know, all the skinny pieces.
Right.
You fruit trees you could prune for height, so you could prick without a ladder. The pruning for height is done more in the summer after you pick the fruit, and now you're
citrus. Now the apples.
You prune for height. A lot of the deciduous fruit trees you prune for height, where you just make them shorter.
Right.
And then they're going to grow more, of course, during the fall. Then when you come in the winter, you could, you know, get those twigs out or the crisscross branches or open up the center so it's more like a vase shape. So like on a rose tree, you prune it so it's kind of a vase shape so the air could circulate through it. Same principle for a fruit tree. You want that a vase shape, usually with things spreading out. Some fruit trees, you might have a central leader rather than just a vase. But air moving through the tree is helpful. You get more, if the tree is too dense and twiggy inside, that's where you get more insect problems.
Right.
And also it helps to, if there was any disease on the leaves, you discard those leaves. On roses especially, you want to rake everything out from underneath the tree, because if they had chili thrips, you know, there could be eggs in there.
Oh,
you want
sure.
to get rid of all that stuff, so, and rust spores and all that. So it's a good chance to do some hygiene for your
now,
trees, too.
On the website, I know there's a section with trees, and mm-hmm. so pruning is in there, but is it give you kind of step one, two, three, four, or...
Not, that's something that we're in process
okay.
of working on.
I'm there's sorry, I didn't mean to...
Yeah, on the spot here. There's things from UC too. So if you just put fruit tree pruning and then put UCANR, you will find some resources. Because there's like a home orchard home orchard section there
okay.
for the homeowner. And there's another website that we use a lot is from Dave Wilson Nurseries. Tom Spellman, who's one of their big instructors there, educators and researchers, is very involved with Master Gardeners because he teaches our classes on fruit trees, and he
right.
also is the one who's doing the checking on the chill hours here and comes out to the research center.
And they do have videos on this as well.
They've
from
expanded
planting
their
to
all
pruning
kinds of stuff.
To, I don't know about picking the fruit, but...
They've expanded their information quite a bit,
yeah.
so it's a really good resource.
One thing you mentioned, I'm going to just say it real quick, pruning it for height.
Mm-hmm.
I've driven by people's homes. They've got this huge orange tree in their backyard, mm-hmm. and they've got all the oranges picked about the 6.5 to 7 foot level.
Yep.
And then everything else they've tried to get with, if they have it even, a fruit picker.
Yeah, I have one of those. So even if you have it pruned to, you know, no, we're trying to eliminate the use of ladders too, because it's
right.
such a cause of injuries.
That's my point is
yes.
that you
There's
don't have to
so
have it.
There's only so high you can go. You
right.
don't have to have it that
right.
high. And if you have a citrus tree that's something that really is really high and you think, oh, maybe I'll bring it down, don't do it all at once.
Right.
Don't
that,
cut off more than about a third at once.
Right, because that then, will shock the tree
yeah.
or put it into shock potentially
yeah.
that could.
So bring it down a little bit over a period of a few years,
right.
bring it down. If you have way too much fruit, too, and you can't get up there, call or contact Harvest Club, Orange County. There's an organization that will pick fruit off your trees and bring it to food banks in Orange County.
Which
so they really was a wonderful thing. That's instead of your fruit falling on the ground and rotting or attracting rats.
I was going to say attracting rats.
It can go to people who would appreciate some fresh fruit.
Sure. You know, we got a couple minutes left here before mm-hmm. we have to sign off. Is there anything that you can think of that we might want to emphasize? I'd like to maybe mention, again, this is Linda Guinness, who we have here, and she's one of the leads for the Master Gardener Hotline. We're going to mention maybe the website, the contact numbers, and how you can reach the hotline as well,
right.
real quick before we close, but then we'll summarize maybe a little bit.
Yeah, we can... What we want to do is just make people aware that we're here to help you, and there are no dumb questions, and don't be embarrassed about anything you ask, because
right.
we don't really know who you are.
Well, they can't see you. They can maybe hear you if you're talking on the phone,
yes.
but that's
but anyway,
you're anonymous.
It's, you know, sometimes we make almost like making friendships here. We have one lady that would call us every summer about her Boston ivy, and we got to know her, and, you know, she would call on different days, so a lot of us got to know her, and she didn't have internet, so we talked to her on the phone, and she was, I think she wanted someone to talk to, but we felt very, you know, we had a very fond image of this woman. She lived in Italy part of the year, and then would come to live in Laguna Beach part of the year, and then we hadn't heard from her for a while, and somehow someone found out, oh, her son, I think, contacted about a question, and we asked him. You know, his mother had passed away, and we mentioned
how
we had developed this relationship with her through the hotline. So we're here to help, and we like helping. And don't think your question is silly or insignificant or, you know, and then you're free. We won't know if you did what we recommended anyway. So,
so
feel free to...
Do we mention the...
Okay, well, there's three different ways... You can go to our website, which is probably the easiest, MG Orange,
right.
And then you would see there's a contact us spot there or a X garden question.
Right. Couple so different, that's a Google
a couple
search.
Different, yeah, a couple different places where you could actually find our website. And then from there, there's a form you could fill out where it says gardening question. You click on that, and there's a form you fill out and just send that in.
Right.
You can directly contact us through email at uccemgochotline@ucanr.edu. And if you didn't get that big giant thing there, that's all spelled out, too, on our website.
Right.
Or and if you don't have internet, you can call us at 949-809-9760, and you will be leaving a message. So please try to speak clearly and give us as much detail as you can.
Right. This has been a great hour. I always enjoy this with you, Lynn. I enjoy just seeing you because you're a wealth of knowledge. In fact, I think they misspelled your name at birth. It should be Genius, G-E-N-I-U-S.
I get teased about that. Yes.
But you're very knowledgeable, and you're always so pleasant to be with and share.
Well, thank you.
Share this information.
I enjoy this, and I think this whoever thought up this radio station really was doing a great service.
Well, I can't say it was me, but I try to support it as much as I can, which is great.
But it's just a fun thing for Master Gardeners to have, and another way for us to reach the public.
That's great. You know, one thing, real quick, we got a couple of seconds. You do a gardener. Investigation.
We're doing a workshop soon. It's called Garden Scene, Be a Garden Scene Investigator, and we had a lot of people sign up, so it's something that we might repeat in the future. So
just
you check our website, and you'll see our classes there. So it's something, if you're interested in this more, you can keep an eye out on our class list or sign up to get our emails, and you'll find out when the classes are.
Right. This aside from the other things that are announced as far as classes, this is one that if it comes up again, I would really encourage folks to consider it. It's fun to do the research, and it's fun to find out. It's not as hard as you think it might be.
No, we give away our secrets, but that doesn't mean we don't want you to call us. So please keep contacting us with questions.
Because you know what this could lead to as well is you might become a master gardener at one point.
Yes.
But the other aspect is you might be able to help your friends resolve some of the issues they have in their garden.
Yes.
So this is David Letourneau. And my guest with me is Linda Guinness. We want to say thank you again. And like I said, it probably should be Genius, but she's so humble she won't change her name. but stay tuned and come back with us next week, the same time, Thursdays, 8:30 a.m. until 9:30.
Or the podcast at your convenience.
Perfect. Thank you, Linda. We enjoyed having you here today.